Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
What's new? It's the news, the new noise. What's going on in the world? The good, the bad, and the sometimes ridiculous. We're going to cover it all for you right here today. It's back. It's new noise on the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, and I'm joined by the anchor man of all anchor men, the man who's going to bring us the news today, Mr. Chris Sinzak. You ready to lay it on us?
That's right. Go fuck yourself, San Diego.
There you go. Now you're in the mood. So what's been going on with you, man?
I'll just same old, dive in. Putting actually something together, kind of rock and pod related for this July. I wanted to give a quick mention to, a lot of you guys know that we pushed Rock and Pod to April of 2023, and we'll have official announcements about that coming soon. I'm working out, final paperwork and stuff, but I had a lot of people that, podcasters and non-podcasters that were like, oh, we still want to come to Nashville this year. Can you put something together? So I, Tracy McAndrew, who, is without her, Rock and Pod would not exist. She came up with a great idea, and I'm helping her run with it. And it's called the Rock and Pod Retreat for 2022. And it was announced about a week ago. It's going to happen Saturday, July 23rd here in Nashville. And it worked out really well, because the way it worked out is everything, once you're there in the morning, basically everything is within a 5-minute walk from each other. So once you're there all day. The big part of the morning is going to be like speakers and guest workshops and stuff. And that's going to be kind of podcast centric. So if you're a podcaster or content creator, this is for you.
Okay. Who do you got talking at that?
Well, I announced today Larry Roberts is going to be there. He spoke at Rock and Pod last year. He's a best-selling author, podcast coach. He's great at getting you better with your branding, learning how to brand your podcast, expand your audience. I've got Susan Thompson, who was she's a PR expert. She's a PR agent. And a lot of big issues with podcasters is getting guests and getting PR agents to listen to you and, connect you with guests that you want to interview. She's going to be part of it. I'm working on a few more speakers right now. I can't announce right now, but we're going to have special guests talking at that. And the morning will start at Bowie's downtown on 3rd Avenue. It's right in the heart of downtown. We'll have speaking sessions from, 9 in the morning all the way till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Your lunch will be included if you register for this. And then from there, we're going to walk over. It's literally a 5-minute walk to the Musicians Hall of Fame, which is a municipal auditorium, which is a big historic venue here in Nashville.
Yeah.
And we'll have a guided tour. Jay McDowell, who's the curator of the museum, also ex-member of BR549. He's been a Rock and Pod guest in the past. He's going to give us a private tour of the Musicians Hall of Fame. And this place is insane. It's got gear, stage, clothing, all kinds of stuff that was used on your favorite records, favorite concerts. Not just country, rock and roll, R&B. It covers all music, and I've toured this place twice, and it's incredible. It's like the place. Anytime I have friends coming into town, I say go to the Musicians Hall of Fame. So we'll do that for a couple hours, then we'll all walk back, 5-minute walk, back to Bowie's, and then we have an awesome concert with Power Slave, the Iron Maiden Experience. These guys are amazing.
Yes. Yeah, they are.
And Terry, who's the singer, I've known Terry for like 20 years now. Terry used to sing in a local band called Valhalla. And every time anyone would see Valhalla that hadn't seen him before, they were like, oh, my God, that guy sounds like Bruce Dickinson. So
nice.
You will not believe the pipes that this guy has. And you'll think that Bruce Dickinson is up on stage. They're really, really good. They do a full Iron Maiden tribute show. And then opening for them will be our good friend Greg Mangus, Sandy Gennaro, and Rock United, doing lots of great 70s rock and metal cover songs to open
awesome.
Show. And that'll be at Bowie's.
So good.
And you'll get all three of those things will you'll get your whole day covered for $100 a person. And just go to rockinpod.com. I've got links to all the whole thing. Also, if you're not a podcaster, a lot of you listening are not podcasters, but you come to Rockin' Pod every year and you want to hang out with everybody. The museum tour is going to be something you could take along with us. You obviously pay through the museum for that, but then the concert also is open to the public. So, you can spend most of the day with everybody. So there's also a separate link for just the concert as well. So feel free to come to Nashville July 23rd and hang out with us. It's going to be a great time.
Man, that sounds awesome. A whole day planned out, all rock and roll, hanging out with podcasters. And like I said, if you're a podcaster, I mean, there's always room to improve, and the people that you learn from can be invaluable to you. And it sounds like you've got some great people, some very smart people lined up to give some good advice for the thing. And then, you can't beat the Hall of Fame because, like you said, it was awesome. We were talking off air. There was even a little Ace Frehley item sighting in there. So maybe you can line up some kind of prize or something for whoever spots Ace Frehley first.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah. And
at the Hall of Fame.
And I'll mention that, a lot of the podcast, we do have a lot of podcasters that do listen and content creators. A lot of you guys that come to Rockin' Pod every year, you miss out on like the education track that we do because of, you'll be busy doing interviews all day. So this is kind of a way to not have to worry about that and just go ahead and take in everything you need and get valuable tips and stuff. So it's a way to do that. It's also a way to reconnect with everybody this year. Since we didn't have an expo, we can still get together and hang out. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Heck yeah. If you're thinking about starting a podcast, that sounds like a pretty good day to kick it all off, Spend some time with some cool people, learn a little something about history and podcasting, and then party with two awesome bands that night, all right here in Music City. And that's just one night. So you come to town for the weekend, and you got one day taken, and the rest of it, you can do whatever you want and have all kinds of fun around here.
Yeah, and most importantly, you get to hang out with Aaron and me.
That's right. Most importantly. Well, we took up a little extra time with that, but that's okay because we ain't got no reviews.
Nope, not this week. It's kind of soon after the release of the last episode.
Yeah, that's all right. You guys keep them coming in. You know how much we love them. If you give them 5 stars, we'll read them on the show. Podchaser, Apple Podcast reviews, Facebook recommendations. Help us out.
Yeah, or else Aaron's going to cry again. You don't want that.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I had to break out the Kleenex, so let's not get that going again. I didn't like that. But last week we had a lot of fun. We did what we do best. We proved to the world that hard rock and classic style metal is still alive and well in 2022 by showcasing 10 of the hottest new rock acts out there. Last week on Fresh Blood, I'm so proud of ourselves, so proud of the bands that we played. We got such a great response to so many of them.
Yeah, it was great. We already got great feedback on that one, and one person in particular said that they're psyched that they got hooked up with Lydia's Castle. They love that new stuff. So, I'm excited that we could turn you on to some new music.
Yeah, I saw some awesome comments for Battering Ram and Flicker Tail. Good stuff. We did great. We picked a lot of great bands to showcase. And I always think it's funny. I wonder, one day a band member wakes up and goes, I don't know what happened, but overnight we got like 200 more Facebook likes.
That's the goal.
Yeah, exactly. I hope that's the way I imagine it. I hope that's the way it really is.
Yeah, for sure.
So whenever we come out with a new episode, like the one you're hearing today, New Noise, we always make the announcement on our Facebook page. What? You're not in with us on the Facebook? We got a page. Go like it. Once you like it, follow it up. Get the notifications. You'll know every time something new is going on, whether it's an announcement for a Friday Night Live. Yeah, we're doing one this week. Maybe it's an announcement saying Aaron Camaro is going to be making an appearance on a wrestling show. I guess since you're plugging stuff, I'll plug stuff too. Let me open this up one time. I'm going to be on the Pro Wrestling Zone Week in Review with Rick Del Santo and Marcel Williams. That's this Thursday night, 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock where they are, I guess. Look up PWZ. It's a podcast. They got good stars. Looks fun. It's going to be a good time. Our friend Buddy Baker hook me up on that one. So it's going to be live stream, and if you can't catch it on the live stream, you can always check us out later on when they release it as a podcast. So, you know, that's where you find out about stuff like that. You keep up with what's going on with Decibel Geeks by simply giving it a like. Then what you can do, if you want to get even more involved, is join up with the Decibel Geek Facebook community. That's a group on Facebook made up of nothing but the most awesome people. They don't care about nothing but rock and roll when they're talking in the Decibel Geek community. All kinds of cool stuff being shared back and forth. They do the same thing we do. They find new awesome bands. They share them on there. That's what it's all about, you know. Keep it going around. You might find your new favorite band on somebody else's recommendation, or you can find an awesome band and recommend them to everybody else. Talk about the current happenings in rock and roll like we're doing today, and just have a good time with like-minded people in the Decibel Geek community. So when we come out with a new episode, we release the news on the Facebook page or our Twitter account. Now, when you see that, you go, damn, that's awesome. New episode of Decibel Geek. I got to retweet it. I got to share it and get the word out about what's going on over here. And when you do that, it compiles into a list of awesomeness that is our Geeks of the Week.
Geeks of the Week this week are Adam Cox, Rock and Ron Runyon, Mark Alden Taylor, Mark and Jerry BS Sessions, Freeform Rock Podcast, Jay Shabluski, Rob Webb, Kevin Williams in Obscuria Podcast, Matt Porter, Simon Catt, Jeffrey Mendenhall, Pantheon Podcast, The Bakery Podcast, Aaron Baker, David Glenn, Darren Parkin, Mike Parnell, John Phillips, Paul Korn, Jason Warden, Shay Hargett, Shane Abair, Kristen Schimbeck, David Cathy, Will Honeycutt, Vet Halen, Ernesto Aguiar, Keith Rockford, Joseph Capone, Scott Crouch, and as always,
The Mooger Fooger. Oh, yeah, right on the money. Those are our people, our awesome friends. They just want to tell you about what's going on. It's the Decibel Geek Podcast. They're talking about rock and roll, and they love it just as much as you do. You ought to be listening to it and getting involved in the conversation yourselves. Thank you to everybody that shares and retweets our episodes. That's why you're Geeks of the Week. That's why we love you so much. We are a proud part of Pantheon Podcasts. It's a pantheon, right? You think about that, like the Greek gods, and they're all up in the mountaintops on Mount Olympus, and the clouds are floating by, and you get up there, and there's BJ Kahuna, and there's Baco, and there's Chris Sinzak. It's the pantheon, you know? We're all hanging out together because Pantheon has gone out, and they have recruited the best of the best podcasts, all the best rock podcasts, all the best country and rap and Weezer and so many other different kinds of podcasts. They went out and found the very best. They put them all in one place. That place is Pantheon Podcast. If you're looking for something new, something you may not have even known existed, odds are you're going to find it on Pantheon. Like I said, check out their roster. They got all kinds of amazing podcasts. You're going to find other ones like us that you love a lot.
Yeah, well, I hate you right now because now you've made me picture you and BJ and Baco in togas, and I togas, really don't appreciate
the,
that.
The little leaf things on our heads. It's awesome.
Okay, I thought you meant leaves on something else.
Loose cannons playing a harp.
Scary.
He's trying to create our new Beat the Geek theme song.
Oh, yeah. All right, so we ready to talk some news?
Yes. What's going on in the world of rock and roll? Let's see. What do you got?
Well, let's start on a bummer note because this just came out today. Founding Autograph bassist Randy Rand passed away today.
I saw that, man. That sucks.
I don't know what. I'm not sure what it was that happened. They just said that at the time of death, he was surrounded by his wife and his family, but. I don't know. Autograph, I never fully got into Autograph. Were you a fan of them?
Well, I mean, when I got the news from Steve Szlepski today, that's how I found out about it. And then I was on Facebook and I saw Jimmy Bell was talking about them because I guess they had done something together. Mm-hmm. But Autograph, I mean, Turn Up the Radio, of course. Right. You know, everybody knew that one. That's a great song, man. Just kind of jams. And at the time, you know, it's like nowadays you come out with a song and be like, don't turn on the radio. But back then, you wanted to turn it up, you know, really loud because they were playing cool stuff like Autograph. But as far as like really into them, I never really was until I got a little bit older. And then I started, you know, like most things, started doing the Decibel Geek podcast and saw so many people that were really into them that I started doing, you know, keeping my eyes open for CDs by them when I'd be out hunting and find them every so often and listen to it and dig it, you know, and say, man, this is a band probably should have listened to more, you know, it's way more than just the one song, that's for sure.
Yeah, the few times I've, you know, Jimmy Bell's a great player, and there was a few times I did kind of dive in a little bit on him. I liked what I heard. These are kind of one of those bands you have a blind spot for. Like, obviously, Turn Up the Radio is a staple. I mean, that song still gets a lot of airplay, but...
What's funny is I actually knew Jimmy Bell by his solo stuff before I even knew he was in Autograph.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I've come across some of his solo stuff years ago and really liked it. And then, like, recently realized, you know, oh, shit, that's the same guy from Autograph.
It's one of those bands that probably should have had a better shake than they did in the 80s. I mean, that one song was kind of it for them, you know. But
that's funny, though, because you think, you know, you get the one big hit song, then usually, especially back then, you know, a big video on MTV, that's the kickoff of something. But, you know, it's funny that they were never able to. It was really, they're kind of known as a one-hit wonder, and it's kind of a bummer.
This is a stirring tribute, and I'm sorry. The Steve Plunkett, the guy that was the singer, he went on to do the theme for the TV show Seventh Heaven. Do you remember the show Seventh Heaven?
I think I know what you're talking about. I don't think I watched it.
I didn't really either. I remember it, though. Like, Jessica Biel was on it, and then the guy playing the dad wound up being a pedophile.
Yeah, I remember Jessica Biel.
But it was kind of a Christian-based family show, I guess. But yeah, like, Steve Plunkett wrote the theme song for that and wound up making a fortune off of it. But
wow.
I don't know. Autograph went on over the years.
It's funny that a show like that would have a heavy metal theme song.
It was definitely not a heavy metal song. Go look it up on YouTube. You'll be like, oh, that's the guy.
Turn up this TV show.
Yeah, no, that sounded nothing like that.
It's Seventh Heaven. It's really awesome.
Yeah, this is like the worst eulogy ever for a guy from Autograph. But no, I saw it today, and I was like, we should make mention of it. And if you're an Autograph fan... send us a list in the comment section of like what songs we should check out by Autograph, because I'm really kind of, I have a blind spot to them for sure. Let's move on. Matt Sorum says the disintegration of GNR Use Your Illusion lineup was nobody's fault. He says it's nobody's fault, really. The band was way too big at the time. There's a lot of people with their paws in the pie, a lot of distractions, too much money, and too many drugs and alcohol.
I think it'd probably be more accurate to say it was everybody's fault than to say it was nobody's fault.
GNR is an interesting band because, you know, Appetite was so big at the time, and then when Use Your Illusion came out, they were just epically big. You couldn't get away from them. But
and you didn't want to because they were awesome. I'm grateful that I was able to witness that, because, like, when GNR first came out, I was kind of rebellious to it because I was still kind of at my, you know, Kiss is number one, you know, and I really don't care about too much else. Mm-hmm. And Guns N' Roses came out and they were fucking massive and everybody's wearing GNR shirts and everybody's got Appetite. And I go, you know, they're all right. They're no Kiss. And everyone would be like, fuck you. But then eventually, you know, you listen to the album and you got to accept it because it is amazing. And then loved it. Loved Guns N' Roses. You know, even though it's something everybody else loves, I got to love it too because it's just that damn good. And when Use Your Illusion came out, man, that was a big deal. You know, I remember going the day it came out to get it, you know, going with friends that were buying their own copies of it, you know, and loved it, man. It was great to be alive in those days.
It's kind of funny. They were influenced by the New York Dolls, and like the New York Dolls album title seems apropos for their situation, you know, too much too soon. These guys were very young, and then when Appetite blew up, they became the biggest band in the world almost overnight. How do you handle that when you're, 23, 24, going through that at the time, I'm trying to give Axel a little bit more slack over, you know, in hindsight, because he kind of has explained over the last few years that he got swindled by a lot of bad actors at the time. Like, you know, he got pulled into like this cult like stuff going on when they got big, and people were messing with his head. So
yeah.
I try to cut him some slack. Obviously, his ego did get giant. I mean, but I mean, anyone's would at that age. But.
Sure. Yeah. And you got to, again, you know, 20 some years old. You know, it's easy for us old guys to look at it and be like, well, you should have done this, you should have done that. You know, we've lived our lives, and I'm sure if Axel looks back, I'm sure there's a million things he'd have done differently, you know.
Sure.
But
well, and then
you're young, you know. I can't imagine being that age and having everything you could want at the snap of fingers.
And MTV really made kings out of those guys. I mean, like MTV latched on and launched them. MTV was a big part of Guns N' Roses' early success, in my opinion.
Because every time Kurt Loder would break through with MTV News, it'd be something about Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, and they were the poster boys for rock and roll at the time. And, you know, Motley kind of hit their peak around the same time, and that was the whole Motley and Axl feud and all that stuff. But I think Guns N' Roses, they kind of broke through outside the hair metal confines, and they became like they were big on a pop level too. I mean, you got to look at the whole enormity of the whole thing, and then, you know, Use Your Illusion comes out. And I do think Axl was, you know, reading his own press a lot, because I think you could cut several songs off that record, off that double record, and make it a single record that would be just awesome. Because there is filler on those records.
For sure.
But
you know, and it's always fun whenever I think Cobras and Fire did it like a long time ago, and we always talked about doing it, is take that and turn it into a discussion, turn Use Your Illusions 1 and 2 into one album, because everybody's album is going to be a little different based on what they like.
Right.
I always thought we should do that sometime.
This is one of those things where as a person in their 40s now, I kind of get like what he was going through. So I'm not as hateful on Axl as I used to be, but I don't know. GNR, maybe Matt's right here. I mean, because everybody wanted to blame Axl for any issues back in the day, but I mean, throw drug addiction into the mix on all these guys and money and ego and fame, and of course it's going to blow up. That's just the way it works, you know?
Yeah. Even with all the drugs and alcohol, it's hard to hold it together when you're at that level, I got to imagine. And then add all that crazy shit into the mix too, and it's bound to fail.
The next story, speaking of tour mates from the User Illusion tour, Metallica was in the news this week. This cracked me up. Apparently, James Hetfield is still fuming over the Load and Reload album cover artwork.
He didn't like it?
He did not like it. And I mean, you know what those album covers are, right?
Jizz and blood is what I was always told.
It's cow blood and semen, and
is it also cow semen?
No, the semen is from the artist Andres Serrano, who did the artwork. And I don't want to know what he did with that cow,
bleed,
but yeah,
yeah.
No.
Oh wow, I did not know that. I never until this moment ever thought, I wonder where the cum for the album cover, came from.
Yeah, it was from a photo titled "Piss and Blood 26."
Wow!
In a new interview with Metal Hammer, Serrano was asked what the reaction was from Metallica's fan base and the band to the album covers. He said, "I think the images were a hit. I read a review once where the Load album was named number one on a list of best album covers. Who the fuck put that list together?"
It came down to Rock and Roll Over and Load.
Yeah, no shit.
Let's give it to Load.
He says, we know Lars and Kirk were happy with it, but James was not. I think James is still fuming. And James calls those the wilderness years for Metallica. And he says, the whole we need to reinvent ourselves topic was up. Image isn't an evil thing to me, but if the image isn't you, it doesn't make much sense. And he says that he thought that Kirk and Lars were after a U2 kind of vibe, Bono doing his alter ego. I couldn't get into it. I would say at least half the pictures that were to be in the booklet I yanked out. The cover went against what I was feeling. Lars and Kirk were very into abstract art, pretending they were gay. I think they knew it bugged me. I think the cover of Load was just a piss take all around that. I just went along with all this crazy, stupid shit.
I believe that.
And then, of course, they interview, you know, in another interview with Large, they asked him about his favorite album cover. I'm not much for favorites. The Load and Reload albums with the amazing pieces by Andres Serrano. They will always hold a special place in my heart. So, of course, Lars loves them.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I wonder what they would have looked like if James would have done it. Been like a flaming demon or something on the cover.
A skull driving a hot rod or some shit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just shows how different James and Lars and Kirk are. You know, but
I'm still waiting for the story to come out about how Lars and Kurt snuck up on him and cut his hair one night.
Yeah, I got to think that James wasn't really on board with the whole cutting the hair thing.
I wonder about that.
He doesn't seem like he would have been into that, but I don't know.
It's like but we all have to do it or none of us can do it, and we're all doing it, so.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if that was the case, but I don't know. I just, you know, and I saw some Metallica fans were kind of pissed at James over this because, you know, fans back in the day, and I remember me and several of my friends were like, what the fuck is Metallica doing with this? But James defended it to the hilt back in the day. And everybody's you have a problem with it.
Yeah. At the time, I mean, you kind of got to, though, you know. You can't be like, hell yeah, we got this new album coming out. It's called Load. I hate it.
All right.
The other guys love it. Or they're acting gay. I don't know what their problem is. It sucks. Don't buy it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I never liked those album covers myself. I thought they were stupid looking. But, my problem wasn't so much the cow blood and semen or whatever, but it was the way they fucked up the Metallica logo on those album covers.
Yeah, the logo sucks.
It's like, why would you update such a classic logo?
Because, like you said, you know, they're trying to reinvent themselves at the time. You know what? And they, you know, it worked. It really did. I mean, look at the younger kids that came out at that time when, you know, they weren't around for the classic Metallica, the really, really heavy shit before the Black Album. It kind of helped keep them relevant, kept them on MTV.
Oh, no. It was the right move. I mean, success-wise, I think they played it just right because they kind of became a hard rock band.
Right, and then later on, returned to their classic form of playing really heavy music again. So,
yeah,
you know, sometimes you got to go away a little bit to make people miss you. And I know a lot of people, when those albums came out, they were really missing their classic Metallica.
Yeah,
but it's all good because in a couple of years after that, they start coming out with new albums again, and it's heavy shit, and it's awesome.
I'll tell you though, I didn't have the outrage as other friends of mine that were Metallica fans did. because I still think Hero of the Day and King Nothing and I Disappear.
There's good songs on those albums, for sure.
You know, even some of the lighter stuff on those records are well-written, well-performed songs. I mean, they're not, I mean, if you're going to listen to, you know, And Justice for All and then that, of course that's going to be different, but yeah. You can't blame them. They probably felt like they were cornered into a box, and it's like, let's just do what the fuck we want to do, because they had made enough fuck you money at that point where they could do whatever record they wanted to do.
Totally. And whatever they came out with, people were going to buy it.
Staying on kind of on the Metallica subject, Jason Newsted was back in the news this week. Did you see all this stuff about the possible Van Halen tribute thing he was involved in?
Yeah, I saw some stuff that people were talking about. David Lee Roth was maybe in on it, and Alex was all about it, and they were talking to Joe Satriani, and I could never make any of it, if any of it was 100% or not, or if it's just, you know, people talking.
No, it's confirmed.
Yeah.
And this is the weirdest thing, because, like, Alex Van Halen is like a hermit. Like, he never... Once Eddie died, I was like, we're never going to hear from Alex again. He's not going to do anything. He's not going to do any Van Halen stuff. But it turns out he was kind of the guy turning the knobs on this whole thing. And it all started with Newsted saying, and he did an interview with the Palm Beach Post. And, you know, Newsted's got this thing called the Chop House Band, which is kind of like a outlaw country thing he does. And but they'll do like two or three shows a year, usually in Florida. And it's always a benefit show to, like, put instruments in kids' hands and stuff. It's always charitable stuff to help push music. But because Newsted doesn't need the money. You know, he's he saved his money. You know,
he's got that load and reload money.
You know, he's trying to push this whole, and I feel bad for him because, you know, he's really pissed off. Well, at the same, I feel bad for him and I don't, because he, it's one of those things where, like, if you're being recorded, it's going to be on the record. So he was being recorded for this interview, and at the end of the interview,
especially if you're saying something earth shattering,
at the end of the interview, he just flippantly throws out, "Oh yeah, I got contacted by Alex Van Halen to try to get together with him and Joe Satriani to do this Van Halen All-Star tribute thing," and mentions that he was gonna be the bass player for it, and then he turned it down, I guess, because he felt it was too much of a cash grab. And then Satriani came out like a few days later and confirmed it. He goes, "Yeah, it was actually in the works," which I thought was pretty wild. And Satriani definitely could play all that stuff. In my opinion, though, why it would have made more sense to go to Steve Vai.
Yeah, that's the same thing I thought too. Exactly.
I was a little surprised that Vai wasn't the person contacted, but then David Lee Roth weighed in on it. Did you see his quote?
No, what did he say?
Van Halen News Desk, which, you know, they're kind of like the place to find Van Halen news. They've released exclusive stuff from Dave before. They went ahead and contacted him, said, "Do you want to chime in on this whole thing?" And he emailed them the following statement. He goes, "In my mind, Van Halen in the age of COVID is going to require two of us for every position. Satriani and Lukather, Anthony and Newstead, Al or Tommy Lee. Probably the only one who could do my job today would be Pink."
Oh, I did see that because I thought, that's pretty cool. Oh, Pink, yeah. What?
Although I could see her doing that stuff. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked. But I love Dave. He always has an interesting answer for everything. But yeah, I guess this thing was actually in the works. So I don't, maybe it's still going to happen. I'm not. The one thing that I thought was interesting, though, was there's no mention of Wolfie here. Are they leaving him out of this?
I think he doesn't want nothing to do with it, is what I read.
Yeah, I read something from him,
and he said, "I don't want nothing to do with that."
Obviously, you can't call it Van Halen. I mean, you'd have to.
No, it would have to be, you know, the Van Halen tribute, Eddie Van Halen tribute experience or whatever. How would you do it? I mean, so you got Alex Van Halen. He can still play, clearly wants to still play. You know, that's, I guess, the bottom line in this whole thing is Alex don't want to stay home. He wants to get out there and play. Right. So then, I mean, why not Michael Anthony?
I think he, well, that's the thing. That's a weird thing. So Roth was the only one who brought up Michael Anthony.
Yeah.
So they reached out to Newstead instead of him. And I thought that was weird. And maybe this goes back to the whole feud with Sammy because they don't want Sammy involved. To me, it's got to be, you know, the original three guys. And then you just rotate out who plays Ed's parts, but you do it as a, like an homage to Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, you could do multiple cities and have different guitar players, three different guitar players for every show.
Yeah, you could
maybe
call it like the,
maybe you don't know who it's going to be till you get there. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be cool, too. You call it the Van Halen Legacy Show or something, you know?
Yeah. You show up and you got, like, Ace Frehley and Slash and, you know, somebody else comes out. Steve Vai, you know, comes out and the three of them each do a handful of songs. That'd be awesome. And you don't know who it is till you get there.
I'd love to see it. I mean, maybe it is a cash grab, but at the same time, there was, you know, so far there's never been anything properly done to pay tribute to Eddie Van Halen since he passed.
Yeah. You know? And, but the other problem with that is, you know, what about Dave? Dave's right. You know, he ain't going to be able to do it by himself. And I don't like the alternative.
Well, I don't think this is something that should be a tour. I think it could be like a one-time show. Do a stadium show and have all kinds of special guests come out, but do it as a one-time thing, make it a pay-per-view or whatever, but I wouldn't make it a traveling road show. I think that's too much.
Here's what I propose. David Lee Roth, Michael Anthony, Alex Van Halen, three different awesome guitar players, halftime of the Super Bowl.
Oh, that would be fucking awesome.
That's my suggestion right there.
Well, as soon as Van Halen releases a hip-hop album, I'm sure the Super Bowl will come calling.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Bad idea.
Yeah. Featuring The Weeknd. Yeah.
Speaking of stuff like that, you know, I'm a little mad at Mick Jagger. It's new noise, you know. This is something recent. Mick Jagger says the future of rock and roll is in the hands of not one of the bands we played last week on Fresh Blood or have ever played on Fresh Blood. The future of rock and roll is in the hands of Machine Gun Kelly and Youngblood. Now, to be honest with you, I have no idea who Youngblood is, but based on his recommendation of Machine Gun Kelly, I think it can't be good. So I go, well, you know, it's Mick Jagger. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Let me check it out and at least see what it is. It's not Mick. It's not.
I saw something with Machine Gun Kelly. He was on Howard Stern this past week, I think. And he did, what song did he? He did a cover of Aerials by System of a Down with his band.
Oh, God, yes, I saw that. Oh. So bad.
He made no attempt to actually hit the notes. It was just, he just grumbled through the whole thing. It was awful. I mean, if you're going to make a System of a Down song sound uninteresting, that's really saying something.
Yeah, pretty bad. I mean, yeah, and the microphone, dude, you put your mouth by the microphone when you're singing or speaking. He's just kind of over here mumbling about this and that. And he's kind of, Aerials.
I mean, I'll give...
What the fuck?
I'll give Miley Cyrus more credit for crossing over to rock music than I will Machine Gun Kelly.
That's funny because we talked about that at the time when those came out that year. And we said, you know, well, did Machine Gun Kelly or Miley Cyrus make your top 10 of the year?
Well, it didn't make the top 10, no, but... I mean, I think what she did was a little bit more genuine than what he's doing.
Yeah, I'd say. Yeah.
I think it's funny. There's a YouTuber I watch named Stevie T, and he's like he's a young millennial in Canada, but he's an amazing guitar player, and he does a lot of rock and metal based videos, and it's always comedy stuff. But he did a video called "We Need to Talk About Machine Gun Kelly," and. He made an interesting theory where he was like, you know, Machine Gun Kelly was big in the hip hop game, and then he started making fun of Eminem, and hip hop fans got really pissed at him and kind of ran him out of the hip hop industry, and now he's been making fun of Corey Taylor and Slipknot for the past year, and trying to do that music.
Yeah.
And, you know, Slipknot fans and metal fans are hate his guts now. So his theory is that they're going to run him out of metal. And the next thing he's going to do is try to go country and insult Dolly Parton.
Yeah, that seems like mathematically a correct statement.
Yeah. So I never thought we'd touch on Machine Gun Kelly on this show, but we've done it.
Dang, that's terrible, man. Machine Gun Kelly, the coolest he's ever been was when he was getting paid to pretend to be Tommy Lee.
Yeah, he was great in that movie. Yeah, I loved
him. Yeah, that's about the only thing I really like him as, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, he had Tommy Lee down really well. Yeah. But like, pretend to be a douchebag, no problem.
It's the news.
It's the news. All right. Some more sad news this week. Cynthia Plaster-Caster died at 74 this week.
I saw that. If you don't know, you're probably not a Kiss fan, but Gene Simmons wrote a song in tribute to her, even though I guess the word is that he never got to actually get his cast made.
No, he didn't, and... I saw her in an interview said that she was confused by that because she's like, why is he writing a song about me? I've never done him. But, you know, she cast Jimi Hendrix and several other famous people, the Rolling Stones. And
talking about their penises. It's a great idea.
Hard,
I mean, it's something I don't think anybody else thought of before then. You know what I was just thinking would be cool is if I got, like, this plaster cast kit. We got this stuff. You know, what if I, like, took it with me to concerts, you know, tried to meet the rock stars, tell them I want to make a plaster cast of their penis. They're going to think it's cool. They're going to let us hang out. They're going to do their drugs with us. It's going to be awesome. What an idea. And it actually worked. Like, imagine that in other situations, like you're in Hollywood or something, you want to meet your favorite actor, and so you show up and be like, hey, listen, you know, my name is Aaron, I got this plaster cast, and I really want to get in here and meet Megan Fox, you know, so here's what I propose. I got my plaster caster kit, and I will make casts of her boobies. What do you say? Come on in, you know.
Awkward.
Yeah. It's just that nobody wants to be on the shelf standing next to Jimi Hendrix. Not me.
Stereotypes galore this week on Decibel Geek. Okay, so speaking of awkward, did you see the Queensryche news that came back this week?
No, uh-uh.
So I guess Scott Rockenfield is suing the band, and I don't know if you heard about this whole story, but, like, I guess, you know, he was in the band through, like, 2018, and then he took paternity leave, and now he's claiming, well, his wife did.
Okay. All right. Hey, you never know nowadays.
Well, she took maternity leave. He took paternity leave.
Okay. But, I got you.
But he left the band for a while and was taking time off to, like, you know, be with his new kid and everything, and then, according to him, you know, they cut him out of the band, and, like, he is owed money for all kinds of merchandise and all kinds of stuff.
Huh.
But and he put, like, a Queensryche 2021 site up last year, making it sound like he was starting his own version of the band. It's like, 'cause, good Lord, we need another Queensryche. It was confusing, but then, like, I guess Michael Wilton and Eddie Jackson have fired back at him and countersued him.
Oh, wow. Holy shit. It's getting serious now.
Yeah, it's gotten ugly. And after reading through this whole thing, I kind of side with Queensryche on this, because it sounds like to me that he was just being wishy-washy, and they gave him every opportunity to play on that album, The Verdict, that came out. And, you know, Todd LaTorre wound up playing drums on the whole record.
Oh, wow.
They, you know, from what they're saying, like, they gave him every opportunity. They set up conference calls, they set up meetings and everything, and he just kept kind of ghosting them. It's gotten really ugly, but the way I view it, it seems like Scott Rockenfield's kind of lost his mind.
Yeah, I mean, at first it seemed like, well, I mean, I get it. You just had a new baby, you want to spend some time, you know, all that. But then when it comes time to record the new album, you think, okay, you know, come here, or we'll come to you, or however it's got to work, and you know, let's record the new album, then you can go home for a while, and then we'll go on tour, and then you can go home for a while, you know, because it's not like Queensryche's touring nonstop nowadays. You know, they probably go on runs here and there, but, you know, you'd think, okay, you know, let's go hit the studio, unless it was something like, hey, I'm going on paternity leave, and then the next week they call and go, hey, we're recording the new album.
Yeah, well, the most interesting part of this whole thing that came out with this legal paperwork that got released somehow to the public was that they, you know, they had reached a financial settlement with Jeff Tate over the whole name thing back in 2014.
Yeah.
And part of that, though, was that Scott Rockenfield, Eddie Jackson, and Michael Wilton had to secure a loan from a third-party lender that would be used to pay Jeff Tate a lump sum of the entire amount agreed upon with the settlement. And basically, the way it, and they put, like, their houses and cars and everything up for collateral.
So Tate loses all rights to use that name whatsoever.
Yeah, that's how they won the name. And but the problem is, you've only got Michael and Eddie out there work, because they put that up as collateral, but they're going on tour and trying to make as much money as they can on tour to pay that loan payment. And if that loan payment falls through, then that collateral gets taken away and they lose their stuff.
But didn't Scott Rockenfield also invest into this?
He did.
So then why? Yeah, that doesn't make much sense then.
So he's not a part of the band, so therefore he's not working and making any money towards that loan payment. So you can't blame those guys for being pissed off at him.
Yeah.
And also part of the, it was like music gear and stuff that Scott Rockenfield had put up as part of the collateral for the loan. And the agreement was, you're not allowed to sell any of this stuff that's up as collateral, obviously, because it needs to get seized if we don't make our payments. Scott Rockenfield went ahead and sold all that
stuff. What the fuck?
Yeah, so it's like he really left those guys twisting in the wind here.
I mean, if you're doing that, you better be selling that stuff and then putting all the money towards the bill.
Yeah, it's really ugly.
It's messed up. And so they could end up losing, after doing all that, losing the Queensryche name and their homes.
Or, I mean, they'll at least lose the collateral to cover that loan.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, well, Queensryche, they've had big hits, and, you know, they should be fine. It's they're not as well off as you think.
No, a lot of these bands, unless you're, you know, at the upper levels, you know, they rely on touring probably now more than ever just to survive, just to keep it going, you know. And I know Queensryche's got a lot of fans, but they're not selling out arenas or anything like that.
No.
So even if you're not a huge Queensryche fan and they're coming to town, go see them, if nothing else, to try to help them.
Yeah, and then this article also says that at one point, Scott Rockenfield intentionally and wrongfully withdrew $10,000 in cash from Queensryche without permission and for his own personal use.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're fired.
That's real bad.
Yeah, that's automatic dismissal. You're stealing from the company.
You ready for the no shit headline of the week?
Yes.
Gene Simmons on Kiss's upcoming End of the Road shows. This is going to be the last tour. We're done. No shit.
Well, you got to say it over and over again at this point, because there's been so many times in the past you've said it and then it wasn't what it was, you know. Farewell, honest.
Yeah, but I mean, God, they're in their 70s right now. It's over.
Like, come on, Gene, you're going to milk it for one more after this, aren't you? No, this is it. This is really the last one. Come on, Gene. You've been saying that for the last 25 years. You're going on one more after this. Everybody's going to think this is the end, but then it's going to actually be the end. You're going to hit them all. I promise you, this is the end. We're not doing no more. We can't do it. Come on, Gene. You know you got to, you know, who else? You know, who else is left standing that can deliver a show like Kiss? Even crippled Kiss nowadays, you know.
Crippled with a K.
Yeah, that's what I'm, yeah, exactly. That's what I envisioned when I said it. It's, you know, these guys are old men. They're crippled up and they need to, you need to let them go, you know, let them go. If you love Kiss, you will set them free.
Yeah, I love this quote. The last thing you want to do is be a guy that stays in the ring too long and gets his ass beat.
Oh,
get
really?
Out of the ring when you're a champion. Hey, Gene, 2005 called.
It's got to be over soon. I just, you know, this is the thing that makes me nervous is that, you know, everybody for so long has been talking about what's the last show going to be. Is it going to be something that blows everybody's minds? If it really, truly is the last Kiss show, are they going to pull out all the stops and bring back all the important people that were a part of it? Are they just going to go out with a whimper? All right, you know, here we are in you know, New Haven and, you know, this is the last show, and good night, goodbye.
I saw an interesting thing. This made me look at something differently. John 5 was on Eddie Trunk recently. Do you remember in the early 2000s a video of John 5 when he was in Marilyn Manson getting into it with Manson on stage, and, like, getting ready, putting his dukes up and ready to punch him?
You know, it's been a long time, but that rings a bell. That sounds familiar. I think I do remember seeing something like that a long time ago.
It's a crazy video, and it's like Manson is fucking with him, and like he throws his guitar on the ground and puts his fist up, and he's ready to like fucking fight.
Yeah,
him.
Yeah.
And then like I remember watching it at the time, going, "Man, Manson must be a real asshole," especially because like John Five's known as like one of the nicest guys in the business. Yeah. But like he went on Trunk's show and actually kind of explained it, which it was interesting to finally hear. He says, "What happened was my sister passed away. My sister died unexpectedly." And I was shocked. I was in Europe and coming down the stairs off a stage after a concert, and they told me my sister died. I was in a state of shock. You just go into a state of shock, and here's the strange thing that happened to me. I didn't sleep for days and days and days. I just wasn't tired. And I remember going to the band members' rooms going, "I can't sleep. I just can't sleep. I haven't slept now in 2 days." And he says, so fast forward to Rock Am Ring and what Manson did, that happened all the time. He didn't do anything wrong. I just snapped. It was weird. I went nuts.
Wow.
I didn't even remember. I just snapped, and I feel terrible watching it now because it really was my fault.
Wow.
You can't really hear what he's saying, obviously, but he's saying, pick up your guitar, because it looks like he's going, come on, come on, but he's saying, pick up your guitar, because he knew what was going on. And I feel horrible about it, but it was just a bad situation at the time.
Wow.
It was terrible because he was so nice during that time and all that stuff. I was in such a weird place, and it was just a bad time. I don't even remember it happening. It was just terrible. So Manson, not the villain in this story.
Wow. And for a long time, I bet you people watched that and thought, you know, oh, Marilyn Manson's fucking with him, and he just couldn't take it no more, you know, and probably that Marilyn Manson's an asshole to him all the time. And that's a crazy story.
That just shows you, you really don't know what you're seeing online sometimes, and then you hear the context, and you're like, oh, wow, it's actually not at all what I thought it was.
And that's cool that after all those years, way back in 2003, somebody thought, you know, you ought to ask him about that. That was a weird thing.
Yeah. So, well, hats off to Eddie Trunk for bringing that one up.
That's a good question.
Because, I've never heard him comment on that whole video, and that video always fascinated me. I'm like, what the fuck happened to make John 5 snap like that? You know, because he's not that type of guy. It's like, it's interesting to hear his side of that. But yeah, like, you know, of course, there's plenty of other stuff to pick on Manson about, but not that one.
Yeah, it's wild. That's awesome. You know,
so a couple more stories and then we'll get out of here. Richie Faulkner commented on the new Judas Priest album, said it's completely written.
Nice.
We just need to record it properly.
Heck yeah, bring it on. If it's anything like Firepower, I'm ready.
Well, I'm wondering how it's going to be because, you know, him and Glenn have both done interviews over the last few months, and they both kind of said that it's not going to be exactly like Firepower because Judas Priest always tries to do something different with each album, and there might be more progressive elements on this one. So I'm like, oh, God, what does that mean?
Oh, boy.
But I don't know.
Nostradamus 2.
Oh, God, please no. Yeah, I hope that's not the case. But I've also heard Richie say that it has more of like a Sin After Sin stained glass type sound to it.
Hey, so, now we're talking.
So I'm hoping it's a little bit more of the 70s Priest sound. I would be down for that for sure.
Hell yeah. That's my favorite era of Judas Priest.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just glad they're not trying to do Painkiller over and over again. Yeah. You know, that's, I mean, that album's great and all, but like, let's do something different.
Right, because the last album was cool because it had different elements that would sound like they fit into different eras of Priest. You know, they're like, let's write a song that sounds like it would have came off this album, and then let's write a song that sounds like it would have came off of this album, you know, and you can kind of pick them apart a little bit and go, oh, that would totally fit on this and that would totally fit on that. And that seems like a good formula because then you get a little something for all eras of Priest fans.
Right.
Except the ones that like Nostradamus.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I listen to Priest all the time, but I went back because Firepower has really occupied a lot of my listening for Priest stuff lately. But I did go back a few days ago and I listened to Redeemer of Souls. And when Firepower came out, I remember I kind of immediately discarded Redeemer of Souls. Like, oh, it's nothing compared to Firepower. And it's not as good as Firepower. But I was like, man, there's actually some really good songs on this record. So that's one, if you're a listener and you're a Priest fan, go back and listen to that album because there's actually really good stuff on there. I think the production hurt that record a lot. But
I need to do that, too. I haven't listened to that one in forever.
There's actually a lot of good stuff on there. And I was kind of like, I was very fast to discount this record after Firepower came out. So good stuff.
All right, I got one. There was, I don't know if you know this or not. As we record this, it's the 3-year anniversary of Rock and Ron's war with Rat Pack Records. You remember that?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, I saw the post today came up, and man, Ron was fiery back then. And he was ready to go to war with Rat Pack Records over them deleting some of his videos.
It was Bisto Blanco, right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I remember. Yeah, Ron posted some. It was Bisto Blanco was doing. They played like 2 new songs off their upcoming record at a show he was at. And he posted the video of it, and Rat Pack Records had a shit fit over it.
Yeah.
And then Ron had a shit fit over their shit fit.
Yeah. And it was really a little of both. You know, it was like they were saying, look, you know, these were new songs. They're not even released yet. You know, we don't want them out there. And Ron's going, I don't get paid for doing this. You know, I do this because I love rock and I love Bisto Blanco. So, you know, they're both kind of like, fuck you.
Yeah. And we haven't heard from Rat Pack Records ever since. But that's,
you know,
okay.
And everybody's intentions were good. But yeah, that one got a little out of hand that time.
It did. I mean, Ron's point, I still kind of agree with. It's like, you know, he was in there with hundreds of other people that were recording that stuff on their phones. What's the difference, you know,
right,
if we put it out or if they do? But I guess we're a respected media outlet, so okay.
Oh, yeah. That's us.
Yeah,
respected.
Well, that's the only argument you can make otherwise. I mean, because it's like
Ron made us respected, so I guess that's it's his own fault.
Although I remember calling him and talking him off the ledge that morning.
I remember talking to him that time, too.
I was like, you need to calm down, bro. Oh, boy.
I'm not going to calm down. I'm mad.
He was dug in on that. God bless you, Ron. We miss you so much.
Yeah, man, I miss him a lot. I saw that today, and I read his big, long post from that day, and it's like, hard to believe that was only 3 years ago.
I know. Time goes by so fast now.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody the other day. I was like, Rockin' Pod was up, what, like 8 months ago?
Wow.
And it feels like it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, it kind of does.
It's like, it's crazy. All right, so let's go out on a really positive note, okay?
Okay, good. I like that. A good feel-good story to wrap up the new noise today.
This is feel-good, wholesome, family-friendly. Megadeth's Dave Mustaine claims he peed on the floor of the White House bathroom, and he said, I had to do it.
Peed on the floor of the White House bathroom.
Yes, he did it in 1992.
Okay. So I guess my first question is who the hell lets Dave Mustaine into the White House, and what was he doing there?
It says he went to the White House in 92 with the Rock the Vote campaign for the Democratic National Convention coverage, made the outrageous claim while introducing the song Holy Wars during Megadeth's concert last night at Tucson. That's as of April 10th. He says, I want you guys to know that I've lived through a lot of different eras in the U.S. and seen different things, and one thing that makes me most proud of everything here in our country is you guys, the way that you are handling yourselves and the way that, as the metal community, there's a lot of people that go out there and they say things and they totally embarrass themselves, and I want you guys to know how proud I am to represent you.
Oh, yeah.
He continued, when I went up to the White House, I was so proud to be able to go up there and say, fuck you. You think we're stupid? We are not stupid, motherfuckers. By the way, when I went into the White House, I went into the Royal, whatever the fuck it's called, White House bathroom, and I peed on the floor. I had to.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, 92, Dave Mustaine pissed on the White House bathroom floor.
Yeah, I can dig the sentiment of it, but to actually have done it, that's wild.
And then it goes into all of his politics, and I'm not going to get into all that shit.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was a hilarious headline.
Jeez.
I had to do it.
Yeah. Don't invite Dave Mustaine over to your house.
He's
going to piss on the floor of the bathroom when you say, what the fuck are you doing? Why'd you piss on the floor? He's going to be like, I had to do it.
Yeah, so if Megadeth goes back to the White House, somebody better hand him an adult diaper right away.
They're going to be watching him now.
Yeah.
Hey, wait, I got one more thing.
Okay.
It's so important. It's so important. Ugly Kid Joe's coming out with a new album in 2022. Yes.
I didn't even hear about this.
Yep. I got my insiders telling me what's going on.
Anything other than that, or just
All I know. That's the word.
Is it an EP or a full record?
Full record, I'm told. Yes, I'm very excited for that. And then what? Follow it up with a big U.S. tour, right? You know what I'm saying?
Well, they tour here all the time. Why not?
Damn it! Ooh. But at least we're getting new music.
Well, since you brought up Ugly Kid Joe, hi, Metal Mike. I know that's who gave you that information.
Hey, now I've got more than one operative.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
A whole network. Right on. So, that's awesome. I'm going to get out of here. I got to go use the bathroom, but I'm actually going to pee in the toilet. Because my wife ain't going to hear me going, I had to do it. Yeah. I just had to.
And I think you're going to be hearing new noises like kind of a regular bonus episode going forward after this week.
Right on. Good deal. Just what you ever wanted. More Decibel Geek in your life. If you love us, share this episode when it's released. The notification will come up on Facebook, or the tweet will be there on the old Twitter under new ownership. Share the shit out of it just the same. Get on out there
and
share what we're doing here on the Decibel Geek Podcast. No, it is under new ownership.
I know. I just wasn't going to get into that today.
Oh, I mean, I ain't saying nothing. I'm just saying it is.
Yeah, it's true.
And it don't make no difference. Share it up just the same or share it up even more. Free speech is alive for you to share and retweet the Decibel Geek podcast.
Just don't pee on the bathroom floor.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.